So you may be thinking, what's the director of trading and optimization of Sembcorp, a company I've probably never heard of, here doing talking about the grids? Well, Sembcorp is actually, we're a Singaporean company with a large presence in Singapore, India, Vietnam, China, where they're really at the center of the decarbonization over there. We've currently got about 2.6 gigawatts of renewables. We're looking to grow that to 10 gigawatts by 2025 and have about 70% of our profits come from renewables. Now, in the UK, we aren't renewable developers, but we're really focused on the energy transition. So I'm really interested in how the grid's going to develop. We've got up in Teesside, we've got the largest private wires network in the UK. For those old enough, it's the old ICI site, and we have biomass, good quality CHP. It's the biggest hydrogen production and consumption in the UK, and our key challenge up there is delivering decarbonisation for our customers. So we're looking at CCUS, we're looking at hydrogen. The other bit, which was what really attracted me to Sembcorp, was we've got a fleet of very flexible generation, like Nick's just been talking about. It's all embedded in the low voltage distribution network. And we've got about 650 megawatts of gas engines, which are there to help the system operator balance the grid. And we've got batteries as well. At the minute, we've got about 70 megawatts. We've got another 50 megawatts coming online this year, and then another 150 coming online. So we're very much at that flexible end. And we feel we're at the center of the transition. And before that, as it was said, I was at the system operator. I was actually designing the markets that I'm now taking part in. And it was very much all about the smart end of the grid. And that bit is really, really important, as Nick said, for getting the demand profile right, etc. Because we are in a situation where we're going to have a lot more demand on the system through the decarbonisation. But there's so many angles you can come at when you're talking about the grid. So tonight I decided to talk about the thing that's kind of worrying me the most right now, which is the impact of wind on the system. And it could in some ways be called the Scottish problem as well. It's probably the Scottish and the East Coast problem is how it's going to be defined. Because for our decarbonisation, we're reliant on building a lot of offshore winds. Now, on our system right now, yes, we have about 100 gigawatts of generation to serve a peak demand of about 40 to 50 on the transmission system. And we've currently got 25 gigawatts of winds, and that's split pretty equally between onshore and offshore right now. Now, but we've got an aspiration to build 40 gigawatts, to get to 40 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2030. So that's an increase of 28 gigawatts. So that's as much as we've got on the system right now in total, coming on by 2030, which is only 8.5 years away. It's not that far. And when I was looking through some of the system operator kind of projections, by 2030, they expect that there'll be 30 to 40 gigawatts of generation in Scotland if we connect things the way we would normally do. And we'd have 6 gigawatts of demand in Scotland. So we need to get the rest of that power out of Scotland. And currently, we're limited to transferring 6 gigawatts of power to England. Because if we try to get any more out than that, the wires start overheating and we can't get it out. So when I do that maths, that's quite an interesting problem to solve. And there's different ways of doing it as well. And of course, we're never going to get, if you've got 30 to 40 gigawatts of generation in Scotland, it's not going to be producing the whole time. You know, we've got 25 gigawatts of wind on the system right now. I'm looking at wind every day because that affects a lot whether my generators are going to get run or not. The peak I normally see is about 15 gigawatts. The lowest I've seen in the last year is 200 megawatts. That's a heck of a swing to manage on the system as well. That makes it quite interesting. But a lot of the time, we simply can't get the power out even now. And that means we're building all these wind farms and we're wasting the power if we can't use it. And the system operator, they said, if we don't sort this out, 80% of the time, that we can't get all the power out of Scotland by 2030, 80% of the time, we're wasting that renewable energy that we're putting on. And every time we can't get the energy out, that costs us money. Because if the wind farms want to generate, because every megawatt hour they generate, they get paid for under their CFD or under the renewable obligation certificate. And that's worth quite a lot of money to them. And so if they can't generate, they say, well, I want to be paid what I would have got. So the you have to pay up to about right now £80 a megawatt hour to switch them off. And then you have to bring something on in Scotland. So the cost of those constraints at the minute are about £500 million a year of constraints in the system. Now, when I was first in the system operating in 2015, I used to say it costs us about £1 billion a year to manage the system. So these costs are going up quite a lot. But I was at the system operator event yesterday, and they were suggesting if we don't do something about this, they expect the costs to rise to between £1 billion and £2.5 billion on these constraint costs by sort of the next 5 years. So we're building wind at the minute that we just can't use. And it's not just the Scottish boundary, it's also East Anglia where we've got Sizewell and all of those generators coming in. So what can we do about that? Well, the first thing you could do is we could attract more demand into Scotland because there's a lot of generation there. We could attract more demand. In my talk yesterday, I described it as the reverse plantation, and because I've originally got Scottish heritage with my surname. And you could do that by having a price that reflects the fact that the wind isn't as valuable right now because we can't get it out. And maybe we could attract things like hydrogen electrolyzers and stuff into Scotland, or more business factories, et cetera, data sites, things like that. I've spent a lot of time looking at whether it's worth putting storage in Scotland, and not batteries so much, because they're 1 or 2 hours at the minute. They'll probably go up to about 4 hours. I was looking at more long-term storage, cryogenic storage, where we could maybe pump for 10 hours and liquefy air and then use that when you release it. But if you're getting to the point that constraint is there 70, 80% of the time, it's very hard to use storage to solve the problem because it's hard to monetize it. You can get the energy in, but it's hard to get the energy out, and that can be quite difficult. We can try and use the wires between Scotland and England more effectively and actually get more out of them by being smart in the way we use them. And I know that the transmission operator has actually managed to upgrade the transfer without actually building more wires, which has been good. And then the final solution is, and although Nick said it's expensive, et cetera, we do actually need to build more wires as well, but hopefully less wires than if we don't do all the other smart things. And if we look at what we are building, so in my time, we've upgraded some of the lines between England and Scotland, and we also built, because building lines is getting the planning permission, it can take years. And we built the West Coast, they call it the bootstrap. There's a line that goes from Scotland to Connors Quay in Wales, and it's subsea, and it actually carries power from Scotland into Wales. And that's been in place for a while. It's been a bit, we used a new technology. It's been a bit, it goes down quite a lot. The market can't see when it's gone down, so it's a bit inefficient and stuff. But we're proposing building lines. The first proposal is we're going to build lines down the East Coast, one right from Peterhead to Drax, so North Yorkshire, of 2 gigawatts, and another one from Torness on the East Coast of Scotland down to Hawthorne Pit, which is around Durham, when I looked it out, that kind of bit of North Yorkshire. Now, the system operator runs a process every year where they look at
All of the transmission owners say, we want to build this stuff. And they want to build it because they get the regulatory asset base improved, they make more money and stuff. But what's really weird for me is that these lines, since 2018, the system operator has been saying, yeah, proceed, go ahead and build these two lines. But it's only, we only got regulatory approval for it in 2021. And it's now going through planning and it's expected online in 2029 and 2030. So that's like 10 years more since they said it was going on. And actually, when I looked, the projects were first suggested in 2011, believe it or not. But at that point, the network was very different. We didn't imagine all this offshore wind. But just building stuff, we have to build it more cleverly. So at the minute, if you look at offshore wind farms, it's very radial in its approach. You get an offshore wind farm, you connect it to the coast. You get another offshore wind farm, you connect it to the coast. And when you're building that much offshore wind, there's going to be a lot of connections. They all need planning. That's going to be difficult. And each wind farm hasn't got any redundancy as well, because it's only got one connection into land. So there has been some really good work and joined up thinking by this. And it's the Offshore Transmission Network Review, and it's a holistic review to build like a grid in the North Sea effectively. And the system operators have been looking at this. They've been asked by the government to look at it to meet the objective of connecting 40 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2030. And what's interesting is I sat on one of their challenge panels, actually. The chair of the challenge panel's in the room this evening, so she can talk about it much better than me. But when you look at the plan, instead of connecting each one in on its own, you look at it holistically and collect a network. I believe the estimate at the minute is a reduction in capital of 6 billion over the lifetime out to 2050. And only half of the onshore assets you need if you go down the same route. So in terms of the system, I do think we need to build more wires, but we need to do it cleverly. And we need to do it more quickly as well, if we're not gonna waste the wind, if you like. So what do we need to be able to do that? Well, firstly, I think we need joined up thinking. So we've come out and said we want to be the Saudi Arabia of wind. Was that the quote, I think? So we've said we're going to build a lot of wind, but then we haven't said we're going to build the wires that go with it or how we're going to get that wind. So joined up thinking is quite important for me. And I think the Offshore Transmission Network Review is a great idea. The results of it are due out, I think, in June when I last read, but we now need to commit and deliver to it. Because so often we come up with good ideas and then we don't really commit. And that needs the joined up thinking across the system operator, regulator and government. And we probably do need a bit, like I'm a markets person, I hate central planning, I hate being told what to do. But we probably do need a bit more central planning, as we're having in this case with the offshore. And at present, the system operator advises on what lines should be built through their networks options assessment process every year, and I used to sit in that. But it's only advice, there's no compulsion behind it. So the network operators go, no, I don't fancy that at the minute, or my return's not going to be good at it. And so there is a question, because we're looking at, you know, the system operator's going to split away from National Grid into being an independent system operator. Is it something that the new future system operator could take on, perhaps? And I think the final thing is, we just need to be a bit bolder in what we do. When I was at the system operator, I was doing the RIIO plans, and the regulator was saying to me, yeah, Cathy, we really want you to be bold. We need you to take more risks to get to net zero because the prize is so big. And I went, right, so what happens if it goes wrong? Oh, you wear all the risk, don't worry about it. And it was like, well, that's not going to work. And you're going to make me really risk averse. And we're not going to get there. So building wires, as we see, takes a long time. in planning, etc. So if we wait until we're absolutely certain we need a line or we need something before we build it, then likely it's going to come too late. So perhaps we should consider things, not like building wires all over the place, but things like anticipatory planning actually goes some way down the process, the hard bits, because planning's a real pain. And maybe just be that bit bolder so we get to net zero. Thank you.